attorney, advocate, author, public speaker. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM. Flip that switch and turn on your brain. Here is Lisa Wexler.
And in the wake of the fact that all of us know that COVID is literally everywhere, joining us now is hopefully recently recovered Senator Richard Blumenthal, who also just got COVID. Senator Blumenthal, welcome back to the show. Hello, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling great.
Are you?
Tested positive a week ago Sunday. I tested positive. I had very, very few symptoms, I think, thanks in large part to Paxlovid, a wonder drug made by Pfizer, a Connecticut company. And I'm back in action right now on my way to East Hartford to talk about prescription drug cost-cutting reform at a press conference there, and then to our nation's capital, where we have votes later on today.
They can't keep you down long, Senator Blumenthal. They can't keep you down long. I could just imagine you busting a gut, not being able to go anywhere and feeling perfectly well. I don't know what you do. Do you do crossword puzzles? What do you do to keep yourself at home?
Well, fortunately, a lot of the hearings now in the Senate can be done by Zoom.
Oh, okay.
So I was participating in hearings and I had a lot of meetings, again, by Zoom remotely. So I kept pretty busy. If you'll remember when we were all locked down during March of 2020 with COVID, and many of us said that we were busier when we were confined at home because we had nonstop Zoom meetings, right?
That's true.
One after another. And that was pretty much my life for those 4 or 5 days last week when I was locked down at home. But don't ask my wife how it was, because she bore the brunt of my impatience to get out.
I bet.
And of course, she is saintly in her tolerance for me.
We're chatting with Senator Richard Blumenthal, 203-333-9422. Are you a runner by any chance? Because you look like a runner, like you're very fit looking.
I have been for many years a runner. I now do a lot more swimming, elliptical machine, a lot of other stuff as well, because I can't do the same distances. I used to do 8 to 10 miles a day during my peak years, but I've diminished substantially, and now I do a lot less running than swimming and other exercise.
Yeah, but you're very, so running was your thing. That's what kept you. Yeah, I can see you. You sort of have the little bit of a temperament of a runner too. Like, because you're literally always running from things to thing. You know, you're always on the go. You are. We're chatting with Senator Richard Blumenthal, 203-333-9422. So Senator Blumenthal, we haven't chatted in quite a while. We have not chatted, believe it or not, since the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Of course, I get your missives. I get your, I get a lot of your emails and things like that from your campaign and your office. There is a lot of pushback in the country, and I'm hearing a lot of noise to the effect that the Democratic Party is being pushed to the left on the abortion issue to the point where it's an all or nothing strategy. And in fact, Congressman Jim Himes was recently on CNN. He's coming on our show later this week to talk about this, saying that he thought the Democratic strategy of going to abortion on demand, no matter what month it is, no matter what the circumstance, is a loser. And because the majority of American people, a consensus is basically that in the first trimester, it should be the woman who has a freedom of choice. And in the third trimester, it ought to be only in situations of a medical emergency or the mother's life. And in the second trimester, you know, a conversation can be had about some kind of consensus. So maybe it's the 18th week or the 20th week or the 16th week, but something. And I want to know where you stand on this. Do you think that the people who want abortion on demand at any time in 9 months should prevail as a matter of policy? Or do you think that something less than that should prevail as a matter of policy?
Lisa, there is a fundamental principle that was embodied by Roe v. Wade, which is that this question of health care is very personal, intensely private, ought to be made by every woman on her own, consulting with her physician, her clergy, her family. And there are limits. Roe v. Wade provided for a right and a freedom up to viability. Mm-hmm. That is not abortion on demand. It is abortion that is safe and legal. Mm-hmm. That was the right that was overturned by the Dobbs case and the Supreme Court in a very extreme, mm-hmm. really right-wing extreme decision that said, in effect, those freedoms are now going to be exercised by government authorities. They'll decide when it's right for women to have abortions. It isn't that there will be no abortions or fewer abortions. They'll just be a lot more dangerous. In fact, this decision could be a death sentence for many women who will continue to seek abortions, but just without the same medical quality, which has to be assured. It's not abortion on demand anywhere. It's in medically qualified clinics and professionals. So the Women's Health Protection Act, which I wrote in 2013, that's almost 10 years ago, Women's Health Protection Act received 49 votes on the floor of the Senate recently. It is supported, I believe, by the overwhelming majority of American people who really believe that right, that freedom, ought to belong to women, not government authorities. And I agree with Jim Himes that we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, but mm-hmm. at the same time, we want the right to be assured without the exceptions and exemptions that could swallow the protections for women's health care. For example, if there is a requirement for the showing of an undue burden, that is so vague, and in mm-hmm. fact, it in many instances could lead to denial of rights. So we really need to look at the details of legislation. I know Jim is a very careful and deliberate legislator, and I welcome the opportunity to work with him. I think we want to be realistic about what's achievable, and we need to save lives if the overturning of Roe v. Wade threatens those lives. But at the same time, we need to make sure that the right is effectively protected, which I know because I've worked on this issue literally for about five decades.
So let me ask you this. There is a window. So there is a window, Senator Blumenthal, between now and November. Regardless of what happens in November, right now, the Democrats have a majority in the Senate, they have a majority in the House, and they have the presidency. Why aren't you passing a bill? Why aren't you enshrining in law these basic statutory rights for a woman to at least have a first-term choice for an abortion? Why not? Why
Your
is it not happening
is really,
right now?
Why are we not passing the Women's Health Protection Act? Any senator, any legislator who says they are pro-choice should vote in favor of the Women's Health Protection Act. It doesn't require providers to do anything against their conscience. It doesn't require women to choose one course or another, whether to go to term or to seek reproductive rights services. And why aren't we passing that law?
Yeah.
Because 60 votes are necessary, Lisa. And you well know the answer to your own question. 60 votes are necessary.
I don't understand. I guess I'm really dense. And I mean this, Sam. I'm not being disingenuous. I'm really dense. 60 votes are necessary because there's a prospect of a filibuster. Why not at least make people stand up and have to vote on it? Why not at least force a vote?
We did.
Yeah.
Twice. Just months ago, the Women's Health Protection Act, as I mentioned at the beginning, got 49 votes in the United States Senate. All but one Democrat voted in favor.
Who didn't
vote? Joe Manchin.
Oh.
Joe Manchin voted against. And here's the important point, Lisa.
Wow.
How many Republicans do you think voted for it?
None, obviously.
None, exactly. Not a single Republican. And by the way, Mitch McConnell has said if he's the next majority leader, that is, if Republicans have a majority of the United States Senate, he would be open to a national ban on abortion. And you know what that means, which is in states like Connecticut, which have protections, we've incorporated and codified and enshrined Roe v. Wade. I helped to lead that effort in the 1990s when I was still in the state Senate and state attorney general. We did it back then, 30 years ago. But our law would be eradicated, preempted by a national ban on abortion. The most recent law that Connecticut passed, which makes our state a safe harbor, protects women who come here from other states, that law too would be preempted or eliminated in effect. So the stakes in Washington are very high, but every single Republican voted against the Women's Health Protection Act.
I thought that Susan Collins said that she was pro-choice. Doesn't she always say she's pro-choice?
You know, there are a lot of people who say they're pro-choice. And then when the votes come, you need to look at what people do, not what they say. And she had a couple of reasons, which we tried to clarify for her. She, I think, still is under a misapprehension as to what the Women's Health Protection Act does, or maybe she's opposed to it. I'm not sure. But in any event, we're continuing to look for Republicans who will join us because it should be bipartisan. It has been bipartisan.
Oh, Senator Blumenthal, I don't know what to say with all this. You know, this morning, the Dallas Morning News published an article that said that the Texas Medical Association is asking regulators to step in because there are a bunch of hospitals in Texas that have refused to treat patients that have ectopic pregnancies, which is obviously life-threatening to the mother and always results in a miscarriage. And it's a very big story. It's getting a lot of coverage in The Guardian, and it made the Daily Beast today. And it's in one hospital in Central Texas told a doctor not to treat an ectopic pregnancy until it ruptured. You know, once it ruptured, the mother could die, right? The letter said delayed or prevented care in the scenario creates a substantial risk for the patient's future reproductive ability and serious risk to the patient's immediate physical well-being. Two other hospitals may be directing doctors to send pregnant patients home to, quote, expel the fetus when their water breaks too early instead of treating them at the hospital. And in those cases, doctors have said patients are at real risk of infection. So now this conversation about abortion is literally putting pregnant women at risk in terms of treating their health care during or imminently having to do with delivery or in cases of complications of a pregnancy. It's not just a matter of abstract conversation anymore. It just isn't.
Lisa, you are so right, and you should look at the front page also today of the New York Times, which talks about the refusal to provide treatment, proper medical care, when women go through miscarriages. It is a gripping, absolutely infuriating story about a hospital that said in Texas, I believe, we can't treat you because it looks too much like an abortion. This is a miscarriage, and a woman who needs a D&C procedure has nothing to do with abortion because she's miscarried. So, you know, it has widespread ramifications for proper medical treatment, and it is literally endangering lives, as you've just said so well. And you cannot understand how frustrated and furious I feel, having led this effort for 30 years. And, you know, many of us felt at the time of the Roe v. Wade to say, well, this issue is settled, mm-hmm. right? I mean, our mothers, grandmothers, the kids growing up now have never seen what they had to go through or their friends during an era when abortion was criminally prohibited. Now there are efforts to criminalize contraception. So the country is on a very dangerous path right now. And when you ask me why isn't the Senate acting, the answer is we need more pro-choice senators, or I should say more accurately, more healthcare senators, more pro healthcare senators who will realistically vote for what's right for women's health.
You know, the last time you said that, that you took a vote on the Women's Health Protection Act was presumably before Roe v. Wade was actually overturned. Do you think if you took another vote on it now, given that Roe v. Wade was overturned, that people like Lisa Murkowski or Susan Collins might change their mind?
We're going to take more votes, for sure. We're going to take more votes on the right to travel interstate for abortion services. It's the Right to Travel for Health Care Act. We're going to take votes on medical abortion services and votes on privacy to protect women's health care records. And maybe we'll take another vote on the Women's Health Protection Act. But Republican senators need to be put on record now. We did take this vote after the Alito draft was issued. You'll recall that really shocking draft, which eventually became the Supreme Court opinion. I think it was right around that time, certainly not much before or after. And we're going to continue taking votes because, again, it's not whether someone says they're pro-choice. That's easy. It's how they vote. And if they vote against the Women's Health Protection Act and the right to travel and the right to privacy of medical records, they certainly are not pro-choice. And if they fail to, in effect, act, not just talk, if they are going to vote to put Mitch McConnell as majority leader and a possible national ban on abortion, that's something voters deserve to know.
Senator Blumenthal, thanks so much for joining us. You sound strong. You sound recovered. Where did you say you were on your way to? East Haven? Where are you going?
East Hartford. Talk about rebates for consumers on prescription drugs if their prices go higher faster than inflation, and other kinds of measures to protect against the astronomic cost of prescription drugs, which are just way out of sight, and putting caps, for example, on out-of-pocket costs for Medicare recipients, Medicare negotiations, other kinds of reforms that will cut costs.
I'm having Peter J. Pitts on in about 8 minutes. Do you know him? He was with the FDA. He's a big healthcare honcho, Office of Healthcare Policy guy. Do you know him?
I know of him. Yeah. I wish I could tell you I'm going to listen, but
you're busy.
We don't get reception up here in the Hartford area.
I know. But anyway, I'm having him on at 11:30 because he's spent his whole life thinking about, you know, problems and solutions to the healthcare crisis. We talk about that a lot. It's so pervasive in so many ways, and nobody really knows, you know, how to fix it because you worry about the law of unintended consequences. You put price caps on one piece, and then you possibly tamp down innovation in another. And so it's not an easy fix. But it's a huge mess. The 20% increases for people that participate in Connecticut's insurance plan, that's going to hit our own family hard. My son is on Connecticut. These things are, it's crazy, Senator Blumenthal. And the fact that the healthcare insurance companies basically now are our doctors, right? They determine what procedure we get, what medicine we get, how much we have to pay for it. There's something that went terribly wrong in America to allow this. Terribly wrong.
Well, think of it for a moment. Suppose those insurance companies had to bear the cost of increasing prescription drug pricing instead of just passing it along to the employers in higher premiums. They would begin to crack down. That's part of what our bill does, is put the onus on them.
In other words, if it actually had to go into their own profits as opposed to passing the third-party costs onto some. But how do you rule that in a capitalist society? How do you make it affect their own profits? What do you do?
There has to be stronger consumer protection in rules that force them to bear some of the burden. That's part of our goal in the new prescription drug package that we've offered, and hopefully we can get through Congress.
All right, we'll watch that. Senator Blumenthal, thank you for giving us so much of your time today. Stay strong. Be well. It's rainy outside. Make sure you don't get COVID again. And thanks for coming
on
the show. A pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa.
Senator Richard Blumenthal on the Lisa Wexler Show. We'll be right back.